Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? It's Lee and Keys Real Talk Podcast. Sending a shout out to my man Keys. He out there living his best life. Tonight, I have a special guest host, my homeboy Chris, who has one of the coolest Twitter names out there. You know, me and Chris go way back. His Twitter name is Uncle Nappy, your daddy's broke. Me and Chris go way back, man. We go back probably about 10 years, Chris.
We 10 years in, man. 10 years in.
Yeah, about 10 years, man. Me and Chris was playing ball together, you know, doing our thing. Both of us in the Air Force Station out at Fairchild. But, yeah, Chris, man, welcome to the show. Thanks for being my guest co-host tonight. What's going on with you?
Nothing, man. Appreciate y'all having me tonight, man. You know, the big thing was talking to you, sports related. You know, that's where it's at right now. It's kind of hot and heavy in the summertime. We don't have any NBA. Summer League just ended early this week. So, man, let's get to it. And a little bit about me, man. You know, like LeBron say, I ain't from Akron. I'm from a little town called Crawford. So, you know, been blessed to travel the world, man. Hook up with this good brother right here, and we grew through some things together and had a partner.
Yeah.
Man had ill-advised into his life, and, man, it made us stronger, man. But and we always reach out, we connect. So, you know, hey, I'm here for the sports, and y'all in good hands with Lee running the ship, all right?
Yeah, man, you know, man, rest in peace to our boy Trey, man. Our boy Trey, me, Chris, and Trey. We played ball together, man. I think we played ball together about 3-4 years, you know, trying to go for that over 30 championship. And, man, we came short a couple times. We came short 1 year because Chris got hurt. We came short another year because the refs didn't want us to do it. And then, you know, man, and I think 1 year, I think we lost in the championship 1 year. I mean, the team we played had like 25 dudes on it. So, you know, they was a little deeper than us, but we don't make no excuses. But, you know, man, speaking of basketball, Chris, man, you know, this NBA offseason was kind of crazy, man. A lot of player movement. You know, a lot of people got a lot of money. A lot of people got a lot of money that deserved it. A lot of people got a lot of money I don't think deserved it. But what you think about the player movement? You think that's good for the NBA, bad for the NBA? I mean, players forcing trades to go somewhere else. How you think that plays out for the NBA? That's good or bad, man?
Lee, what I'm thinking is because of the TV money has gotten people beside themselves. And I think the big issue is the money that's being given out and some of those players that are not deserving. But you got to think about it. With 32 teams, you can only get so many players. And a lot of teams have young guys that they're trying to develop. So you can't spend a lot of money on them because they're a rookie contract outside of that first round top 10. You really don't have to pay guys. So I think what's happening is the older players are getting more money now. But the good thing about it is those younger players now that's going to have to play 4 years in the system, once they become great, they'll be able to get that money. And you maybe be able to keep a guy, especially when you get two young guys that are at the same level and growing together.
You know, man, you make a good point about that, about the young guys. A lot of people try to compare the NBA and the NFL. Two different sports, two different contract situations. One thing about the NBA, and there's only 15 guys on the team. There's 15 guys on the team, 13 dress, I think. And the veteran guys do get paid. The superstar players do get paid. But if you're a quality role player and you play your role, you can get paid in the NBA also. I think the thing that hurts the NBA right now is the small market teams. Small market teams like Indiana, even though they had a great offseason, OKC, Charlotte, New Orleans, you know, Memphis, teams that have a small market, they end up suffering the most because superstar players don't want to play in a small market. They want to play in a market where they can make money outside of the NBA. That's why you see players, man, Kevin Durant gave up $80 million to go from Golden State to Brooklyn. He gave up $80 million, bro. And then Kawhi gave up, $30 million to go from Toronto to the Clippers. Now,
but check this
out.
What we say, all money ain't good money.
Good money,
the situation is going to generate money. Now, Kawhi's in L.A.
Yep.
What's in L.A.? Anything that has to do with the movie industry. The heartbeat of the United States starts with L.A. and New York. And everybody else gets a trickle-down effect. So for Kawhi to go to L.A., he's going to get it. That's Mr. New Balance. I'm trying to get all my New Balances up right now before they get to be 150 for a running shoe. You know what I'm saying? Because that's a good way to go for him. You know what I'm saying? L.A. advertising, man, it becomes global. But the one thing that you touched on talking about this is it does cause a rift in the NBA. But I think what players are doing, they're getting smarter because these guys got a 10-year window before they get in their last max contract. And that's what he did. He went there so he could play a couple of years, get that max, and then what if he moves again? What if he goes out east? Because I'm going to tell you what, even though Toronto is not the team they were, when it comes time to playoffs, the team that emerges out of East is going to be a little better than everybody gives them credit for. And here's the thing. In my opinion, Philly has the best shot right now, and here's why. All they have to institute is Al Horford. L.A. Lakers have to institute AD, Boogie, Danny Green. Who the Clippers have to incorporate? Paul George and Kawhi.
Kawhi.
That's going to take some time, man. That's going to take some time to mesh that. With the only team right now that's still kind of in place, even though they lost Jimmy Butler to Miami, Philly still has their cast because you look at Boston, what did Boston do? They let Kyrie go because Kyrie is Kyrie. Earth is flat Kyrie. But at the end of the day, they added a dog up there, and he's going to be the same type of player. What's going to happen is he don't have to look over his shoulder at Terry Rozier. He can go out and play his game.
See, and I think a lot of people are rolling with Philly, but the only issue I have with Philly is Ben Simmons. Is he going to come back with a shot? If he don't come back with a shot, they were going to go through the same thing they went through last year. Everybody going to double Embiid, dare him to shoot, and then they let Redick go. I think if Ben don't come back with a shot, then Redick, they going to miss Redick a lot. But a lot of people counting Milwaukee out. I mean, Milwaukee they did lose Brogdon. They lost Mirotić. But I think re-signing Middleton, moving Bledsoe probably to the point, well, they probably had George Hill playing the point, but Bledsoe can play the point. And I think Giannis going to come back better. I think the champ will come out the West. But I'm with you, though. I'm not mad at Kawhi because, first of all, he's from Cali. He did win a championship in Toronto. So those fans aren't going to be mad at him. I think fans be mad at players because they look at it from the team perspective. They never look at it from the player perspective. Players will always do what they feel is right for them. And we also have to look at the atmosphere of basketball. The AAU atmosphere has put itself in college and put itself in the NBA. All these guys know each other growing up. They know each other going through the ranks. So a lot of them, they partner up, and they want to play together. Case in point is New Orleans really wanted to trade that fourth pick for the third pick to get R.J. Barrett to go with Zion. But the Knicks, you know, they were sold that they wanted R.J. Barrett. So, but, you know, I look at the NBA this year, I say the NBA is going to be interesting for the first time in a long time, because in the last couple of years, you knew it was going to be Cleveland, Golden State. And last year, you knew it was going to be Golden State. And can't nobody talk me off this ledge. If KD doesn't get hurt, Golden State beats Toronto probably in six games, five games at the most. So Toronto, you know, they did their thing last year. They took advantage of the injuries. They won the chip. It's all good. But now we got to see what they do this year without Kawhi. I think Philly and Milwaukee will still be the same. I think Kawhi's, Kemba may be an upgrade to Kyrie because of the way he plays. And I think the young guys will probably gravitate and be more willing to play with Kemba than they were Kyrie. And the Nets, we just going to have to wait till KD come back to see where they at. So, you know, it was a lot of moves. So, Chris, out of all these moves, who has the best duo in the NBA? I know you're a big LeBron fan, and I'm a Lakers fan. So who do you think got the best duo in the NBA, bro?
Well, you have to chop this up a few ways. Now, if you just talking about just size, if we talking about size and ability, it's going to be
okay.
King James and AD.
But if we're talking about duo. Championship duo.
Now, what did we see in the finals? Defense. Even though I don't care, all the players get hurt. That's what we do. You know, because if that's the case, Cleveland would have had that championship early when Kevin Love got his shoulder wrenched by Kelly Olynyk, and then Kyrie gets hurt under the basket in overtime. So Cleveland could have won that championship. Because LeBron still was a dog in that whole playoff series. But here's the thing. If you're just talking about sheer size in the building, I got to go with King James and AD. But if you're talking about defenses and playing the game the right way, not taking some bad shots, and come back on the other end and play defense to where they force you beyond the three-pointer when you take a lot of bad shots, it's got to be Kawhi and PG. In my opinion.
Yeah.
Because we've played ball many years, bro, knee brace and all. And one thing is consistent. When you can play defense, you can win. And that's what Paul George and Kawhi have that AD and LeBron don't. Because we saw last year, LeBron took plays off. We watched that. Alvin Gentry and them didn't even want to let AD play after that big trade thing that came through with Clutch Sports. They didn't want him to play. So this dude has fresh legs. Will he be the guy he was when him and Boogie played? Because it was a block party. So right now, it's got to be KD and Paul George, in my opinion. Those are the only two that make sense because they play defense first.
Man, boy, man, you sure think alike. Because I was thinking PG and Kawhi also. But just to go the opposite way so we ain't agreeing, I'm going to take LeBron and AD, not because I'm a Lakers fan. I'm going to take it because I think you're a big LeBron fan. I know you are. I think LeBron is going to come back this year on a mission to show everybody that last year was an aberration and a fluke. I think LeBron this year is going to be a man on a mission. He wants to show everybody that he's still the best player in the world. Although a lot of us may have a couple of guys above him after last year, I mean, I wouldn't put Giannis above LeBron. I probably have KD.
No jump shot.
Yeah, I probably have KD, Kawhi, then LeBron, you know. But I think LeBron will come back this year and be a force to reckon with. And I don't think he's going to sit out as many games as everybody say he is. Everybody, all the prognosticators and pundits say he's going to have a lot of load management. I don't think LeBron wants to do that. I think LeBron wants to play. I think his body reacts better when he's playing. And AD will be a 25, 12-5, got it. 25-12, 3-3 got this year. The last three assists and blocks. I think AD is going to – I don't want him to play above himself, trying to prove people that the move to L.A. was the best move for him. But I think he wants to go out there and win a championship with LeBron before LeBron – you know, Father Time is going to catch up with LeBron. Everybody think it isn't, but it will.
Man, still undefeated. Still undefeated.
Yeah. And I think it's just something about in my gut telling me LeBron is gonna come back and be a man amongst boys this year in the NBA, and he's gonna bring AD along with him, and Kuzma's gonna take another step, and Boogie has already lost 20 pounds since the finals, so I think Boogie is looking at himself as probably looked at the tapes of the finals, was like, man, I couldn't even jump over cheeseburger wrapper. But I'm going to go with you on this one, though, Chris, because me and you play ball together. And one thing you always preach during our games, stop the guy in front of you. If you stop the guy in front of you, we always in the game. So the Clippers would throw out a defense at you that would consist of Patrick Beverly, Kawhi, PG-13, and Montrezl Harrell. They will have four guys on the court that can shut you down. The Lakers, they won't be able to say that. They'll have AD.
No.
They'll have Danny Green. They'll have Avery Bradley. But that's it. And JaVale can protect the rim. But outside of that, they don't have shut down defenders like the Clippers do. So it'll be interesting to see when they play each other how it plays out. I hope Iguodala comes to the Lakers, because if he goes to the Clippers, there's no way the Lakers can beat the Clippers.
Mm-hmm. Even Iggy's going on 36 heat. There's no way that would happen. And here's another thing, too. My only concern with the Clippers is who's going to take that last shot. And when your defense is heavy, because here's the thing. Lou Will is right around the corner from me. My kids go to
Lou
every year. We call him the underground legend over here. But the thing is, who's going to take that last shot? Because Lou did a lot of that last
Lou
year. Yes, sir. Lou Will. And then you got to look at Paul George. Paul George wants to take that last shot. But Kawhi is more apt to go to the rim, take contact, and make a bucket. So how are we going to do that? Now, we got Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers showed that with a big three, he could get everybody going, because who was it taking the last shot for the Celtics and they run? It was
Paul
Pierce. On the move.
Ray Allen.
But if he got locked down, you kick the Ray. What does KG do?
Yep.
He's ready to get a rebound to get a putback. Or if we got time, he's getting a rebound and he's looking for that wing player. So that's the only thing the Clips got to worry about is who's going to take that last shot. Because, like you said, defense will be there. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be the Great Wall of China, because you're not going to be able to shoot your shots you want to shoot. Because guess what? When you switch players, tell me something. If we play a game and you got PG on, you get a good pick set and you get an offer of him. You got Kawhi or Montrez filling that gap. Bruh, who are you kicking the ball to? At that point, who are you kicking the ball to? If it's not a lob, who are you kicking the ball to? And most teams don't have sharp shooters to take care of that pass when you drive into the lane. So that's one thing they're going to have to think about. What's up?
The only thing the Clippers can't do, though, they can guard the perimeter. But big teams are going to eat them up in the post, because they got Zubac, they got Jermichael Green, who is undersized. Zubac, still kind of wet behind the ears. And they got Montrez, who is kind of undersized also, but bulky. So if you put AD at the free throw line and you put Boogie on the block or vice versa, I think they can be got. They can be got with a big man game. but you can't get them playing a wing game. If you got your team
yeah, exactly.
is predicated
and
on scoring
on
the wing,
you can't get them on a fast break. Yeah,
exactly. So a team
you can't
like
get
Houston
the fast
would
break
run.
Game with that team.
Yeah,
that's
team
be a good,
that
that's,
like Houston,
the Houston matchup will be a good matchup
for the Clippers.
Yeah, it was a great matchup.
Yeah, because I, all right, I mean, then we turn our next topic. I mean, you know, when you got the good, you got to go with the bad. So, you know,
yeah.
there was a lot of moves in the NBA. It was some good moves. It was some bad moves. What you think was the worst move of the offseason was?
Well, my biggest concern in the whole offseason was everybody was waiting on a couple of players. And I think that hurt a few rosters. But that OKC deal, like Paul George being taken away, he's in L.A. And then you take Russ and you move him to Houston. And then you get Chris Paul back and he's sitting on, what is it, $140 million for the next 3 years?
$141 million.
That was probably the worst one out of all. Because some of them just wasn't going to work just because, like we talked earlier about the small market team. But this right here was a clear depiction of we know we're going younger now because Russ by himself won't be. But has anybody called Steven Adams and checked on him? Like, Steven Adams is probably sitting there like, is this real? Because I lose a top three small forward in the NBA. I lose a top 10 point guard in the NBA. And then you send me a 34-year-old, and let's just be real, he's crotchety. Chris Paul is a little cranky at 34. You know what I'm saying? He wants things to be ran a certain way. And we all understand that. But at the end of the day, we want the young kid, what's his name, that they just picked up. I can't think of his name right now. For OKC.
Hold on, what's
his name? The 6'5", 6'6", kid, they really want to run point guard. He's from UK. They want him to be the point guard. Now
oh,
you're
talking about Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
There you go. The Gil to the Alexander. You want him to be your future, but you got a 34-year-old crotchety. And 34 in the NBA is like 65 in the regular world. And you're going to allow that to exist in your locker room when you're trying to shift him. And you got to wait till December 16th to move him. So now what happens to your whole brand now? You're going to take a lot of L's, and you're going to try to get a lot of young guys. But Chris Paul's not going to take that, man, because Chris Paul at 34 is still a dog. He's not a very big guy. He has a lot of heart. And all his points will go up next season because you just left a ball-dominant guy in James Harden who has to have the ball in his hand. So your numbers drop. So now what do you do when you come to this young system? Are you going to grow these guys, or are you going to kind of cut them off so you can move on?
You know what, man? I wrote down OKC and Boston had the worst offseason. And I think the only reason I say OKC had a bad offseason is because that's because Paul George asked for a trade. That don't mean you got to trade him.
Yeah.
He's on the contract. Why are you trading him?
But,
y'all
you know,
made the playoffs last year.
But listen. Lee, listen, man. The guy that just won the NBA Finals wants to shift the power. And he's asking the team, the only way I'm going to come here is if you go get my guy, my Southern California brother. So that team is going to do one of two things. Say no and realize that what you have in the next 2 to 3 years will fade. Or do you say, you know what? We got these lottery picks. We'll just throw all these things out the window. We'll pull your guy in. But like you were saying earlier, it don't help the balance of the league. And for OKC, if you get rid of Chris Paul on December 15th, man, you got a good summer league team. You don't even have an NBA team. You have a summer league team that you're going to put on the court after that date.
Okay, Chris, this is what we're going to do. I'm gonna get you out your fan of the game mode. I'm going to put you as the general manager of OKC. You just signed Paul George last year. He come knock on your door this year saying, I want to be traded. You are the general manager. You going to succumb to his trade wishes, his trade demands?
Here's the thing, though, Lee. We just got bounced out of the first round again. Okay?
But you made the playoffs.
This guy want to leave. But listen, I got a point guard that's 31 years old, about to be 31. Russ about to be 31. I got some 6'6 kid coming in as my point guard. I've got a bunch of wing athletes where the league is going. Why not start over? Because at this point, we got Paul George on a whim anyway. Because the Indiana situation, he's ready to leave Indiana. So, in this day and time in the NBA, nobody's inclined to stay long term. Because, like I said, everybody's looking for their 10-year window. When I hit my 10-year window, I can get my max dollar, go lay somewhere for 4 years, and either retire or steal some more money from the NBA. So you let him go. You let him go because all the potential that's there.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say I think Boston had the worst offseason because they lost Horford. They lost Kyrie.
Yeah, big.
Lost Marcus Morris. They lost Marcus Morris. And they lost Terry
Rozier. Blue guy.
I think they should have made an offer to Horford, brought him back, because them young guys respect the Horford, and he was a leader to them guys. Letting Kyrie go, I'm not mad at if you bring Kemba in. I can't be mad about that. Letting Rozier go if you got Kemba, I can't be mad about that. But letting Morris and Horford walk out the door, you got to keep them two guys, man, them two veterans that can mold young guys, show them how to play the game, instill toughness in them. And really, them young guys played well with them when Kyrie and Hayward was out. So I think Boston overplayed their hand a whole lot with all the draft picks they had. Not using the draft picks to go get AD last year, maybe. Holding on to draft picks like you're going to be a player in the trade market when who knows what those draft picks are going to pan out to be. Those draft picks could pan out to be a guy that's in the league 2 years. You know, a guy that's injury prone.
Yeah, right.
A guy that he might be a career G League guy. So I think Boston had the worst offseason. And I also got to point the finger at I'm going to point the finger at Houston, man. I think this Russ Harden thing, everybody think because they boys, you know, they wanted to play together that it's going to work. I just don't see it working, Chris. When you got two guys that need the ball in their hand to be effective, I just don't see it working. Chris Paul is the ultimate point guard. Chris Paul is a facilitator. I'm going to go to this game right here, Chris. When James Harden got his eye scratched in the playoffs against Golden State, and he was out almost the first quarter going into the second quarter, Chris Paul led the team. Tell me that team did not. They played inspired. They knew they were all part of the game. They knew they was going to get the ball. Chris was going to find them in places. They played so much better when he went out the game that I was like, man, you know what? They might pull this game out because of the way they playing. And here comes James, ISO, ISO, and Golden State end up pulling the game out. So I don't see Houston. The Russ Harden thing working out, and I think Boston had a bad offseason. And the third team, I would say, was OKC because of all the reasons you said.
Mm-hmm.
I think the rebuild The rebuild is necessary once you trade Paul George, because Russ is then going to want out, because he at the age in his career where he doesn't want to, you know, go through a rebuild. But I do think this, though, Chris. I think if Chris Paul stays with them, I think Chris is going to play rejuvenated, man. I think Chris is going to come out there and he's going to make Adams a better player. He's going to make Shai Gilgeous-Alexander a better player. He's going to make Gallinari a better player, because Chris isn't a score-first point guard. Chris is a point guard that doesn't mind his teammates getting shine. And I think that'll bring a lot of energy to OKC, even though I think they'll be losing a lot of games. And I think that might start to wear on Chris by mid-year. And, you know, that's when they'll probably ship him out. But I think he'll come out probably the first month of the season looking for a way to redeem his reputation in the league. And I think he's going to play good maybe the first month or two. And then, you know, once some L's start racking up, OKC is going to ship him out probably to Miami to play with Jimmy Butler. And then we'll see what happens. But, you know, there's one guy me and you ain't talked about. And I hate to bring this up. You know, you suffered this injury when, you know, that year that I knew we would have won a championship when you were up in Georgia. You know, how do you feel? Do you think KD's injury affected the NBA free agency?
It did, because the crazy thing about that was he never talked to Brooklyn. He did it via IG. That's how they knew he was coming. So Sean Marks is looking so great right now. But the real thing was everybody knew that Kyrie wanted to pair up. Yeah, Sean Marks did nothing. You're right, Lee. He did nothing, because Kyrie was going to go there, because that's where he's from, the area, man. He wants to go back home. But for KD to come along and then what they still have, like, they're starting 10 of plays with some of them. Like, you got to think about that. Like, this dude could have been like, man, I've started enough games in the league, I don't even got to be on this court right now. But this dude came in and played and gave him positive minutes and played that grit that Brooklyn is looking for. Now, here's the only catch for this. When you have a team full of dudes that's playing their tails off, and with Kyrie, we know what a KD did, because KD's blocks went up when he went to Golden State. But is Kyrie going to buy into that defense they play out there? Because that was one reason why they were as good as they were this past season. So will Kyrie buy into that D? KD will. KD's a ball player. He's a savant. He loves the game. And that was one thing that he said was, I like the way y'all play basketball. It's grit and grind. It's not the whole, you got to shoot 100 threes, or you go a bunch of down screens, wing kickouts. It was none of that. It was all, I like the way y'all play. And that's why I think Brooklyn next year, man, they'll be something to watch, especially if they can keep those guys. If they keep the core of those guys, those eight guys, man, Brooklyn will be tough, because they're going to have the grit and the grind, and then they're going to have superstars that at any given time, if you need a bucket, and that's why they're there, when you need a bucket. You can't ask Spencer Dinwiddie to hit no bucket at a crucial time in the game. But a Kyrie and a KD taking any shot with the guys that's hustling, man, that's something special, man.
Actually, man,
that's going to change the game.
I'm glad you brought up Spencer Dinwiddie, man. So that's one of my favorite players, man. I love Spencer Dinwiddie.
I love that dude.
I look at Spencer Dinwiddie, man.
He's blue collar.
When I look at Spencer Dinwiddie, I think that me and him play the same way, man. You do whatever it takes to get your team a win. You take the bright shots, you play defense, you rebound, you do all the little things to get your team a win. And Spencer Dinwiddie, man, he paid his dues to get his spot in the NBA. But I think if KD doesn't get hurt, it wouldn't have been all about Kawhi this free agency. I think it would have been about KD.
Lord, no.
I think it would have been about KD, because Yeah. Go ahead. I'll jump back in.
The shift to Brooklyn move with a healthy KD, because Lee, you talked about my ruptured Achilles. And when the first thing, when they said his calf, I said it before Shannon Sharp or Chris Carter, whoever said it on FS1. I was like, calf? I was like, that's Achilles. Because you know where mine started at? It started my calf. Then it went into the arch of my foot. And I would go on profiles, come back, profiles, go back. And that time that I did it, I didn't stretch or anything. And I went out there and I popped it. And I was thinking about that. I was like, man, if he would have set out, win, lose, or draw, just set out. Because it's the longevity of a career, not what you do in the moment. Because win, lose, or draw, you're still young enough to play 6-7 more years at almost 7 foot with the jump shot that you have. You know, even if he ends his career like Sam Perkins, where he's just in the corner hitting threes, I'm fine with that. Because that's the dude I know the game is going to be on that. Huh?
Let me ask you this real quick, speaking of the injury. You know, a lot of people said he shouldn't have played, you know. And like you just said, you know, it was your calf, and, you know, you kept, you know, going back. And, you know, la, 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 la. You think if he would have sat out and gave it a rest, do you think he would have got injured at the beginning of the next year? Do you think it would have still been a chance for him?
No. No,
you don't think so?
I dealt with, okay, it starts out with plantar fasciitis. That's what starts. And it starts in the arch of your foot. Then it goes to your calf. Your calf gets weak because you don't have proper blood flow. I dealt with this for 2 years, because by the time I got with y'all and was playing, it was too far gone to where my calf was good days, bad days, weak, feel strong, whatever. But I didn't take it serious because I didn't have the initial pain. So what they got KD from was the initial pain to it feeling okay. And with a guy that tall and the way he moves, even though he's not a heavy guy, just the sheer inertia of him making that move. When he made that move and I watched that calf, it was like somebody sniped him in the calf. I was like, his Achilles is ruptured. As soon as he did, I was like, oh, it's Achilles. And everybody was like, oh, no, it's his calf. I was like, your calf don't move like that unless that big tendon, which is your Achilles, pops. So I'm sitting there like, I'm gasping, but I know the problem. They're trying to say, oh, it's a calf injury. How many days they do calf injury? For like
he had missed 30 some days? 30?
Mm-hmm.
He last played game two?
It was
game three of the Houston series?
It was against Houston.
Yeah.
Guess what the timeline was for the military doctors that we messed with? 60 days. 60 days, and then you need to come back and you walk, you do a brisk walk. You don't jog, you don't run on it, because it takes me 90 days to come back and be able to just get out there and just move around. So, yeah, they set him up for failure, man. But you're right. If KD doesn't get injured and he waits, the injury's not going to do it, because he'll be able to build it up, have time.
And they win a championship, Chris. I think they won the championship,
Brooklyn, man.
I think Golden State won the championship if he don't get hurt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Like, I'm not sitting here acting like Kawhi is not as great as he is. But you put almost 7 foot, he don't want to be 7 foot, but he's 7 foot. If you put a 7 foot guy with his skill set on the court, bro, because somebody's getting shut down. Whoever he's guarding opposite of Draymond, they're getting shut down because they don't have the lane anymore. That's a jump shot game. And you and I know best what's the first thing to go on any player is their jump shot.
Yep.
So you make a guy shoot a difficult jump shot in the fourth quarter, those aren't makes anymore.
Yeah.
But without a KD on the floor, without a Clay on the floor, they become a better shooting team.
Yeah. And plus, I think if you look at those 11 minutes that he played, that game that he did get hurt in, dog, you could tell Toronto was like, oh, my God, this guy is the real deal. I mean, those 11 minutes he played,
yeah,
it was scary.
Yeah.
It was like he hadn't even missed a beat. I mean, his shot wasn't hitting the rim. It was all net. I was like, man. So, you know, I'm with you on this, though. I think KD's injury did affect free agency. I thought he would re-up with Golden State until the reports came out that, you know, that he didn't know he would rush it. There was a chance that he would rush his Achilles, and then Iggy came out and said he was misdiagnosed. So I think KD, I think if they would have won a championship, it probably would have been harder for him to walk away. But, you know, I respect the guy, man. The guy went to Golden State, won two championships, two finals MVPs, went toe-to-toe with LeBron, and people can say he had a better team or whatever. But he made the plays that I remember out of those finals. He hit the shots in game three in Cleveland to win both of those games. So, you know, KD is a special talent. You know, we wish him a speedy recovery. I really don't know how the thing with him and Kyrie going to play out, because I don't see KD being cool with Kyrie being dribble, 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 you know, being ball dominant. So we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, the team that KD left, Golden State, you know, everybody writing them off, man. Everybody saying it's the end of a dynasty. You know, Clay got hurt. You know, Iggy left. They just cut Sean Livingston. And everybody saying it's the end of a dynasty. Me, personally, after they lost to Toronto, I sent the text out to my homeboys. I was like, Golden State will never win another championship. And I stand by that. I think, you know, five finals in a row, you win three, you know, you get the arguably the best player in the world to come join you guys to go with a unanimous MVP and one of the best two-way players in the game. But I look at Golden State now, and it's going to be the Clay and Steph show. And they got D'Angelo Russell, who's a solid guy who can create, but all his plays that he creates come off pick and roll, and Golden State don't do pick and roll. Golden State is more of an old-school motion team where everybody touch the ball. I love Steph. I love Clay, but I think their run is over. I don't think the owners want to keep paying the luxury tax, especially moving into the new building. I think maybe next year, you know, they'll probably try to get some veterans to come play with Steph and Clay. I think they let Draymond go because the Draymond act is old with me. So I know it got to be old with Steve Kerr. I mean, dude, every call he argues, it's like, damn, bro, you can't argue every call. Kawhi doesn't argue a call at all. He might go say something to the ref, but he'll speak his piece and let it go. Draymond is demonstrative over every call. And as a coach, I know that has to be worth it with Steve Kerr. So, is the Golden State dynasty over, Chris?
Yeah, no. And the reason why I'm saying yeah is because right now the way it looks, with Clay being out, yeah. And you're right. Letting Livingston go, Sean Livingston, who I was talking the other day about, if he never had that devastating knee injury and his lower leg injury in his career, he probably would have never been on the Golden State Warriors. He would have been with the Clippers, and he probably got traded to a contender because they couldn't pay him at the end of the day. But the thing about Golden State that I see, yeah, okay, exit Draymond. But the biggest thing with Draymond is you need a guy with a little bit of attitude, but you're right. He's so demonstrative to the referees and the officials, and that's not something that you can lay your hat on, especially when you lose a KD that can shoot, you know, a KD that can shoot the way he can to kind of bail you out of those situations. But here's the biggest thing with Golden State. If they get a few vets in there, a few guys on the fringe of 30, next year after they come back, and D'Angelo, to his defense, he's awesome. And you're right, pick and roll, because what do? At Golden State, they spread everybody out, and they pick so they can rotate outside to shoot jump shots. You know what I'm saying? So you're right. D'Angelo needs a downhill motion, which requires a pick somewhere at the top of the key or the free throw line. And you're right about that. And my biggest thing with Golden State is, dynasty over? Not yet. Let's wait for Klay to get back off ACL. Let's see what they do with Draymond. Because if they get some guys in there with halfway, they have decent basketball knowledge, they can make it work. Because Looney is not an awesome player by any means. He has a skill set. And that's what Golden State has built their team around. You got two guys that can shoot, one guy that's going to do everything, and you just need everybody else around to be smart to either get out of the way or get in to help.
All right, Chris, look. I'm going to throw this out there. You throw out D'Angelo, Steph, Klay, Draymond, and Looney. I know that's a good team as far as offensive-wise, but I don't know if that's a good team defensive-wise. But I think that team can win a lot of games in today's NBA.
Oh, yeah, because it's all perimeter. They're gonna survive because D'Lo can get downhill. And then be able to get, if he can get Looney involved in his downhill action, Looney's going to play better defense. You know how it is, man. You touch the ball enough, man, with a big, and I'm only 6'2", but when I'd have to go down the block, if you made a move and gave me the ball and I can get a bucket, oh, the next time I go down the court, I'm trying to block everybody's shot. Foul or not, because now it's either between a great defensive play or deterring an offensive player to come in this lane. That would help. But the only thing is, you got to look at Steph's inability to guard, point guard, and then D'Lo. And I don't think it's his inability. I just think he don't want to do it. So you got Looney and Klay playing defense and Draymond, and you got these other two guys that offensive end, the A+. Defensive end, they trying to be a C and getting exposed at the same time.
Hold on, Chris. We got a caller, man. Let's see what's going on.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, what's going on with you, man? Hello? Yo, you calling from 404? I guess they don't want to talk to us, Chris. Let's keep talking, man. Hey, look, Chris. I think D'Lo playing with Steph this year, he's going to learn a lot about getting shots off movement. Because you can get good shots off of movement and not the pick and roll. Because if everybody touches the ball, that means the defense has to guard everybody. They can't slouch off of nobody. I mean, the only person you can slouch off of in Golden State probably from shooting a jump shot is Looney. And actually, Looney showed last year that he can hit an 8 to 10 foot jump shot. Because I was like, whoa, where did he get that?
That's all you need. That's all you need. So, as a rim defender, that's all you need.
So I think D'Lo is going to learn a lot about playing without the ball and getting shots off of screens and down screens. I like that Golden State lineup. If Klay comes back, Klay'll be back probably after All-Star break. Or January or something.
Yep.
And I think if I was Steve Kerr, that would be the lineup I'd go with. I would suffer on defense probably going against good point guards and two guards on other teams. But the three, the four, and the five are going against three good defensive players. So you're going to have to give up something. So
solid.
I like that lineup. for Golden State. But I think Russell, D'Lo will learn a lot playing with Steph and Clay about having to get shots off of movement, back screens, pin downs, and strong cuts. Because the NBA, the ISO game is there in the NBA because of the spacing, but the ISO game is easy to defend in the playoffs because everybody knows the game is slower, referees let you get away with more, and a team is game planning to stop you. That's why James Harden is so ineffective in the playoffs because teams know he's going to ISO at the top of the key. At the top of the key.
Hey, Lee, isn't
it funny?
Yeah, but isn't it funny that they let him have his way for like the first couple of games, but then after that, he just becomes inept to do anything. Like, he can't pass out of it. He has crazy turnovers. It's never like he has something to go. And I think Russ being there helps him to do that because now, instead of you being ball dominant, get the ball to Russ. Let him get downhill. Russ will pass out. James Harden will not. So I think James Harden will get more of those 70 open attempts he took this year over his 500 that he attempted this year instead of just looking at him as a ball-dominant black hole.
Well, Chris, you know, speaking of Harden and the Rockets, you know, we wouldn't be doing our thing talking basketball if we didn't do this. D'Antoni don't hold his players accountable, bro. D'Antoni isn't a strong-willed coach. D'Antoni doesn't tell James that's a bad shot. James, Gordon was open in the wing. James, draw the ball and dish. D'Antoni ain't that coach, man. And I think he enables James to be a ball-dominant, somewhat selfish player. Even though he does average 7 assists a game, are those 7 assists coming in the Florida offense or are those 7 assists coming because you have to pass the ball? So I think we have to look at D'Antoni, man. D'Antoni, oh, man. I mean, he's a good offensive coach. He's the same coach
that ran Kobe
in the ground.
Let me tell you the issue with D'Antoni. He had the luxury of having Steve Nash, a Canadian.
Yep.
Canadians are peaceful people. And Stoudemire. Stoudemire didn't cause no waves because he was a part of the offense. Now you shift him to L.A. where you have the Mamba. He is the second coming of MJ, the GOAT. Michael Jordan will always be the GOAT. Until somebody else just does 7 championships and it looks like it's a breeze, Michael Jordan will be the GOAT. But anyway, the biggest thing is that he's never had confrontational teams until he went to L.A. But L.A. did not have what? The talent. So he goes to Houston. He gets another opportunity to coach. And the thing is, he gets James Harden. James Harden is non-threatening. He doesn't deal
traded
good
to them.
With
he wasn't
conflict.
On the roster. He was traded to them.
He wasn't. But that was the goal. When they got D'Antoni, it was to get a top-tier guy there. And everybody saw how James Harden played coming off the bench at OKC and realized, if this dude can do that in this amount of minutes, what can he do over 36 minutes now?
I got to say this, Chris, though. James Harden did vanish in those finals against Miami. He was a no-show in those finals against Miami. Russ and KD did their thing. James Harden did not upend his part. So his playoff ineptitude dates back to those finals.
But you know, like anything in life, pressure does 2 things. What does it do, brother? It busts pipes or
make
diamonds
and crush pipes.
His pipe got busted. his pipe got busted. Because guess what you did to James Harden? You had a young kid come in to keep everything going, and he shot more bad shots than he did good shots. So that carried over into why he had to separate himself from OKC, because it's hard to come off the bench and continue what's already going on versus you setting the tone. Setting the tone is easy. I tell my oldest son all the time, setting the tone is easy. But when you come off the bench, can you continue to do what your team is already currently doing? And that's what he can do. So that's why he's a starter. That's why the ball is in his hand all the time. Because when James Harden doesn't have the ball, James Harden is not the same player.
You know what, man? We got like 40 seconds left in the show. We probably do a little bit of overtime. So we ain't going to talk about the NFL. Man, you'll come back to that. Because I know a topic that me and you want to talk about was the NCAA and amateurism. So I'm going to set it up probably next week that me and you can talk about that along with this NFL proposed 18-game schedule. So we're going to push that to the back burner to a later date. But, you know, it was a big fight this weekend, man. We got Manny Pacquiao versus Keith Thurman. And I want to – what's your prediction,
ooh,
bro?
Ooh. Now, see, this is near and dear to my heart. Because let me tell you, a little history. I'm going to get into it because I got to get out of here. I got another event to go to tonight. Something really big is happening in Metro Atlanta. It's the Rose Bowl. My little nephew, Willie Hinn, who's performed with Music Soul Child, I'm going to an event with them. But, man, the biggest thing about this fight and the biggest thing about me boxing was I boxed at a young age, and I went and I trained in Louisville, Kentucky, at Muhammad Ali's gym. So when I take that, and I got to meet him, I got to shake his hand, he shadow boxed with me. But the biggest thing with this fight this weekend, I love Manny, man. Manny is like one of my dogs because those smaller fighters bring a great fight because the hands are fast and furious. But Thurman's hungry, man. And I just hate for Manny to go out like this because I see Keith beating him by the fifth round. Fifth round, whether it's a I can't go anymore or a TKO, it's going to happen, man, because Thurman is hungry.
I'm going to go the other way, dog. I'm going the other way, Chris.
Going Manny?
I'm going the other way, man.
I'm going with Manny
because of what you said. I'm going with Manny because I still think he has hand speed. I still think he's smart. And I don't think Thurman like getting hit, man. It's something about Thurman getting hit that I see him going into a shell in all his fights when he started to get hit. The Sean Porter fight, he went into a shell. His last fight against Josito, he went into a shell when he started to get hit. But he gutted it out. I think Manny is going to come in there. He's going to fight a smart fight. He's going to put it out, back out. And Thurman is going to do a lot of missing, and he's going to get frustrated. Probably starting about the fifth or sixth round, start to do things outside of his game, and that'll allow Manny to put his hands on him and back out without taking too much punishment. And man, I'm going with Pacquiao, bro.
That's the big thing, Lee. I got you on this. I understand why, but just what you said. Thurman had that one fight where he fought back. And that's the thing. That's why I say fifth round. Because if he can't get it by the fifth round and you go to the later rounds, now Pacquiao is the aggressor because he's been in those fights. Pacquiao went the distance from Floyd. And I'm going to tell you what. Floyd's defense was so good, Manny missed normal shots that he would make cats fall or he'd make cats back up to the point where they didn't want to fight anymore. So if Thurman is wise, he will get it over in the fifth round. He's shown he can get hit and come back because you're right, he does have a shell. He does get in that point to where he's not fighting anymore, he's doing more defense than offense. But with Pacquiao, the later you go, the longevity of Pacquiao kicks in, and he'll take your butt out. That's just point blank simple. Pacquiao will take you out Pacquiao, if they go beyond five, Pacquiao either wins by he'll do a decision, or if Thurman
KO.
That shell, Pacquiao messed around and knock him out. He'll knock him out. Because Pacquiao's hands, Floyd said Pacquiao's hands are the best hands that he's ever faced.
Well,
so,
you know, Chris, man, I'm not picking against Thurman because I don't like him. I don't think he's one of them boxers that is a true believer in the spirit of competition. I just don't get that from him. I think he's a guy that always would take the easier fight. That's my feeling for him. I think if he really
like
wanted
Joshua.
To, yeah. But I think Thurman, I would have more respect for Thurman if he would have called out Terrence Crawford after his last fight instead of Manny Pacquiao. I get it, Pacquiao is a draw, but Crawford is the guy that's begging for competition, and nobody wants to fight him. So that doesn't have anything to do with, you know, my prediction of why I think Pacquiao will win. I just think Pacquiao is going to show him what a veteran fighter that still has skills can do in the ring versus what Jose Cito Lopez showed him. And Pacquiao more game. And Pacquiao is more game. And I think Freddie Roach will be more. Damn, Pacquiao ain't even with Freddie Roach no more, though.
No. He left Freddie Roach a while back. But the big thing about that, like you're saying, you said the key word, veteran. So if it goes beyond five, who's going to take – who's got the fight in their hand? A veteran. And you're right, T. Crawford, Terrence might have knocked him. Oh, man, T. Crawford is a great boxer. But the thing with him is you got to constantly stay on the move with him because Terrence will eat you up. And see, Manny has the power. But like I said, Lee, if it goes beyond five, you and Manny Pacquiao's world right now. You about to get that man because he's shown he can go later rounds and still be the same puncher. And that's what people lose in boxing. It's like everybody's got this heavyweight dream right now. And then when Joshua just got knocked out, the biggest thing was Joshua's a four-round fighter. He's not
a
12, 10-round bout dude. He's not. But the longer you have as an opponent, the better you become. And they showed that. Ruiz showed the world. You get this guy past four, five rounds, you can beat him. And that's what Pacquiao is going to show if he gets beyond five rounds and something doesn't happen, a cut or something like that, or illegal low blows. Pacquiao could walk away with this fight. Yeah. Anything that doesn't stop the fight because of an injury or somebody continuously getting penalties for low blows, Pacquiao could win this fight. But that's why I said Thurman has a five-round grace period. If he can get Pacquiao to quit or knock him out in five rounds, he can do it. But if it goes beyond five rounds, because Pacquiao's that veteran, bro, it's over. It's no longer a fight because it's going to let Pacquiao sparring because Thurman likes to go in that shell. You can't go in a shell with a world champion, a guy that's proven, a guy that's taking Floyd Mayweather to a decision. When you got to wait for three people to decide your fate, just like in the court system, it's not good. It's not.
Well, you know, this is going to be a good fight. I'm glad it's I wish it was Crawford instead of Pacquiao, but it isn't. But I think the winner fights Crawford next. I hope the winner fights Crawford next so we can see this welterweight division pan out because we got Spence versus Porter coming up. And then maybe the winner of Spence-Porter fights the winner of this fight versus Crawford. But we'll see how it goes. You know, boxing has all the politics. But I want to thank my man Chris, you know, for coming on tonight, talking basketball with
me. Thank you, sir.
You know, me and Chris, man. me and Chris go way back, man. Chris is one of my dudes from the basketball court, the hardwood. Man, we blood, sweat, and tears. More tears because, man, we just deserved to win a championship, but it didn't happen. But, you know, man, that's my boy. I love him. Air Force guy through and through, aim high. And I know he got somewhere to be. So, like I said, we're dedicating this show to my boy Trey, who is near Chris point guard, who was probably one of the nastiest point guards that nobody ever seen with his handles, his jump shot, and getting to the rim. And a super sharp Air Force guy. And he's well missed. I hope his son is doing well. And
great
Chris,
man,
I'll let you take us home, man. Close us out, dog.
Hey, man, so listen up. Y'all need to tune in to Lee and Keys Real Talk, man. It's a great show. It's an honest show, and we try to take callers, and tonight somebody ditched on us. But it's all good, and this won't be my last time being on here. But, hey, man, I want everybody to be out there and be safe, man, be responsible. And we'll be back on, and when we come on, you know we talking that real talk, that real sports. Hey, man, appreciate you,
That's
man.
Right.
I love you, too, man. Thank you for everything.
Yeah, man. Go enjoy your you got a little festival or something you going to tonight. So you have fun out there, bro.
Yes, sir.
I'll be seeing you talking your talk on Twitter. Hey, to everybody that's listening, have a good night. Take care of each other. Everybody's listening. Have a good night.
Yeah.
Take care of each other. Be safe. And closing like always. Peace.